Where in hell can you go? Far from the things that you know. Far from the sprawl of concrete that keeps crawling its way. Keep your heart off your sleeve.
Guppy Productions presents Series 2 of From Colchester to Sulawesi, written for Combe Radio by Phil Boast and Paula Larcher. Episode 1 of 6, Arrival.
It can, I suppose, sometimes be the case that the significance of an event, even if the significance is known, cannot be appreciated or fully realized until after its occurrence, when the importance of what is being done cannot be seen for the doing of it. This is, after all, the first day of our new lives and our new enterprise. We have by now spent many days and weeks at the lodge, separately or together, but from now on, if all goes well, this will be our tropical home for who knows how many years to come. All going well, however, is for now a moot and uncertain point, and it has become clear to us that any wellness will be unlikely to take care of itself, but will need to be manufactured by ourselves and others, whoever those others may, in the end, turn out to be. The day had begun at some indeterminate point where our place in relation to the rising and setting of the sun had on our journey shifted by 7 hours. Watches had been reset mid-flight, and we had touched down on Indonesian soil in the now early afternoon at Sam Ratulangi Airport, Manado. Perhaps surprisingly, Oni was at the airport to meet us, and two cars had been organised to transport ourselves, Paula's mum and sister Carol, Carol's three children, Alex, Edward and Hattie, and Janet, our by now long-time family friend, on the final leg of our journey to Bahowo Lodge. Oni was outwardly friendly, at least, but we have learned by now that when it comes to Oni, outward appearances are not to be trusted. And relations with this most important person as regards our future lives and plans could from now on go either or indeed any way. Perhaps with us here he will decide that his own best future lies with us and on our side, and perhaps our concerns are unfounded. But this, as with so many things with regard to our entirely self-imposed situation, remains to be seen. But still, the 40-minute drive saw us to Bahowo, and we drove through the gates of the lodge, and although we did so with wildly mixed feelings, there was for me an overriding sense of relief that after better than 18 months of preparation for this moment, we had at least, and at last, arrived.
So, we're here then. And during the offloading of suitcases, bulging with yet more sheets and soft furnishings, which Carol and I had been frantically shopping for, I don't quite know where to look first. Last time I was here, there was a Pentecostal church very close to the lodge, and now, in its place, there's a beautiful swimming pool filled with clear, chlorinated water, which, after a long, tiring journey, looks very inviting indeed. The lodge I've seen before, of course, in its magnificent outwardly finished state, but inside a lot of the furniture is new to both of us, and my initial impression is that whilst the furnishings are adequate for the purpose, the lodge as a whole appears rather empty, and we'll have to find or have more furniture made. The bedrooms are well enough appointed, but need mirrors and pictures on the walls and comfy chairs. Still, all things considered, and particularly the fact that so much has been done in our absence, it's not at all bad, even through my jet-lagged eyes. And we at least have a fully functioning lodge, which, as a beginning, is no bad place to begin.
Mm-hmm.
Aris, our self-appointed driver who drove one of the cars from the airport, and Nyoman, our housekeeper, are pleased and proud to show us around and to give account of how they have looked after the first guests to stay at the lodge, who are a couple of single gentlemen, coincidentally all French, but having no connection one to the other. We now learn, however, that these have not in fact been our first guests, but rather two Hungarians or Romanians, they are not certain which, had stayed for a few days prior to the arrival of the French people. As per the French people, they had come to us via the dive centre, and the only tangible evidence that they had been here would be a payment for the accommodation in due course. So we had been in business before we had known that we had been in business, which is an interesting but not entirely surprising state of affairs, and aside from Aris and Nyoman, Soltier, Aris's wife, had been shopping for and cooking her delicious Indonesian food, so the guests had evidently been well looked after, and all was well, it seemed. Aris and Nyoman, we have come to realise, have a particular and quite delicate relationship to one another. In the village, Aris has a higher status than does Nyoman, being son to one of the founding fathers of the village and owning a good deal of village land. Nyoman is younger than Aris by several years and married into the village and thus has little status outside the lodge. Within the lodge, however, Nyoman is housekeeper, a position that carries a higher rank than does a driver. And we are fast learning that such things carry considerably more weight here than they do in our native England, and we will have to be aware of this in our dealings with them. But still, the guests have been catered for, and the French people are spending the day diving, and we will meet them later in the day.
You're still hiding in the park. You look so happy when you're down, down, down. Under the trees where you won't be found. And you're still dancing in the dark. It makes you happy when you're down, down, down. No one can see you spinning round and round. And your feet, they keep on moving, even when the nights are cold. When you're old, will you still be dancing? Oh, into the dawn of the light. I haven't seen you for a while. Look happy when you're down, down, down. You keep on moving to keep warm when the leaves turn brown. And you're still reaching up to the sky. It makes you happy when you're down, down, down. I still believe that one day you will take off from the ground. And your stars, they keep on burning.
Having got used to the idea that there are already guests staying at the lodge, which we certainly had not expected when we planned our trip with the family, the first logistical thing to be finalised is where everyone is going to sleep. The lodge has two twin and two double guest rooms and a family room which sleeps four. And after due discussion, Mummy and Janet agree to share a room. Alex and Ed will double up and Carol and Hattie will also share. So everyone gets somewhere to sleep. And we get our own room to ourselves, which is good. So after a couple of cups of coffee and a good look around our new home, everyone retires to their various allocated bedrooms to unpack, shower, and take some time out to relax for the remainder of the afternoon. As with so many of our best-laid Indonesian plans, this is not turning out as we had anticipated. We had expected to ease ourselves gently into our new life and enjoy a holiday with the family before we immersed ourselves fully in our new enterprise. Clearly, however, this is not to be. The lodge is already functioning as a guest house, and Phil and I have certain responsibilities which have to be seen to immediately. So, in our new role as host and hostess, we are duly scrubbed up and waiting when our first guests, or the first guests that we've been made aware of, arrive home in the late afternoon. Introductions are made, and we welcome them to the lodge based on the philosophy that it's better to do this late than never, and we spend some time chatting with them before they retire to desalinate from their diving and prepare themselves for the evening meal. Sulcha arrives to prepare supper, and at around 7 o'clock, all are assembled around our large dining table, with Phil and I at its respective heads, and we enjoy our first meal and easy conversation with the family and guests before retiring for the night. We are all tired, our guests from their diving, and we from our journey, and we are quite early to bed on this, our first night at the lodge. There's been no time for leisure activities such as swimming today, but from now on, all being well, there will always be tomorrow, and this is a good thought to go to bed with. So, first impressions then, and I have to say that it's mostly shock, really. Bedding the family in, talking at length to the staff who have been our staff even before we knew that they were our staff, meeting and catering for our first guests, and all with jet lag. So it all takes a bit of sorting out, and I'm sure it will be less shocking after a night's sleep, in the clear light of the new and first morning at Bahowo Lodge, our new home. The day, however, is not quite finished yet.
And so we lay our heads down together at the end of this day. It's my birthday, and Paula gives me my final and by far my best birthday present, which I confess I had been rather hoping for, but a gentleman must never assume. We drift at last into sleep, and my final thoughts are that whatever happens from here on, however things play out between the forces which are for and against us, we are here now, and can take better control of things than we have hitherto been able to do from better than 7,000 miles away. It may be that the importance of events cannot always be seen clearly at the time of their occurrence, and of many things only time and experience will tell, but one thing is for sure, that this has in our small lives been a big day, and one which we will not forget.
Motherland, cradle me, close my eyes, lullaby. Lie with me, stay beside me, don't go. Don't you go.
Find out what happens when we return to the adventures of Phil and Paula in Sulawesi in next week's episode of Bill's Big Bag of Onions, here on Cone Radio.